Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus. This is part two of my conversation with the one and only Drew Stevens. Doug and I just recorded a fresh episode that will be dropping later tonight. In that episode with Doug, we'll tackle the 12th pick, talk some big picture Bulls topics I think you'll really enjoy pondering over the weekend. And then next week, we're going to start to deep dive into the likely picks available to the Bulls at 12. So we'll be headed towards the most important draft for the Bulls since last year. So the playoffs have been off. The playoffs have been absolutely electric. I hope you're enjoying them as much as I am. If there's one takeaway for me from these playoffs, it's just how much work this front office has to do. So here's hoping they finally find someone in the draft who can help them build a true contender. Until next time, enjoy part two with Drew. You'll hear the latest episode with Doug and I late tonight. Have a great weekend. Go Bulls.
Bulls are out of timeouts. 2 seconds left. Giddy for the win.
Through the city where the legends play, Chi-town vibes on a sunny day. Big red bus with the seats in line, talking Bulls all day, we stay on the grind. Rolling down the lane in the big red bus, see Red, Fred, and Doug bring the Bulls to discuss. From the Jordan days to the present fuss, it's gold in the convo, so ride with us.
Was fascinated by that whole series with Houston and Thompson. What an incredible play. That guy's untouchable to me. That guy's awesome. And I would love to have a guy like that. That athletic and that skilled and that good on the defensive end. But everybody else in that team, like Albert Shangoon, let's talk about him. The guy is like, to me, like almost like a big front court version. He's a poor man's version of Vooch without the shooting, without the 3-point shooting. He's a horrible free throw shooter. He's not good athletically. Horrible defender. Shangoon to me is like, I would trade him in 5 seconds for somebody. And Jalen Green. Jalen Green, my gosh, what a disgusting series he had. I would absolutely trade for one of these really good players that people are talking about. I just want to go in the Durant action. I'd be looking at Giannis. Durant's too old. He's not on the same timeline with them, even remotely. Do you agree?
Yes and no. I think they need someone of Durant's ilk, like somebody that can score, that they can give the ball to when they need a basket. I think more than anything, that was what they were lacking the whole season and in this series in particular. Somebody they could just count on to get them 20, 25, 30 points a night. That's why Jalen Green's inconsistency was so stark in this series. I don't know, man. Like, they need shooters. They need shooters and they need, like, that number one go-to guy.
Right. Offensively.
Offensively. I would definitely think that they should try to see what's on the market for Alpi and Jalen. I think Jalen is like a poor man, Zach LaVine.
Yes. Aspects.
I don't know, man. I would try to see what teams might be willing to give up for those two guys and what you can still kind of keep and maintain and continue to use the bill for the future.
I do want to get into the front office and leadership. How would you grade Arturis and Eversley's tenure so far if you had a grade for these first 5 years? And the second part is, do you believe Billy Donovan is the right coach for this rebuild / retool, whatever they're calling it internally? Are you a fan of Billy? So let's start out with your grade for Arturis and Mark.
I think for the job they've done in their first 5 seasons, going 195 and 205 with one winning season, one playoff appearance, I think Arturis and Mark deserve a D. I might have assigned them an F had it not been for that stretch of the 21-22 season, them hiring the organization's first shooting coach, and the deals that they gave Alex, Kobe, and Ayo. Like, I probably settle on a D for them. It's unsatisfactory, in my opinion.
Agree 100%. And I actually would have given him an F, but you remind me of the Alex Caruso signing, which was great. Again, though, that was completely due to the stupidity of the Lakers front office. You know, that wasn't really, I always point this out, like, you know, a lot of their best moves are due, and the Bears are due to the idiocy of other organizations, but he did it, so you got to give him a hand for that. And then Modest appears to be, you know, I think we're jumping a little bit forward with his greatness, but he's definitely a lot of positive signs there. But everything else from the draft picks, I saw some guy like on Twitter I was arguing with, I can't remember, and he made the point like, what's everybody complaining about? We got three young stars, 25 and under, and, you know, all our draft picks in the future. And my, like, answer to him was like, dude, that's exactly what we had 5 years ago when this idiot took over. In fact, you could argue we had more. We had Daniel Gafford. We had, you know what I mean? Like, a lot of these really good role players that are still in the league. And we had Lauri Markkanen and Zach LaVine and Kobe. And one of them was Kobe White. Like, the one guy he's talking about was on the roster at the time. Like, are you kidding me? This, we would have been better off having a robot make these picks, keeping all our first round picks. And just sticking with the roster as is. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. And that feeds into me giving them a D too. Like they came in, you know, wanting to build through the draft and they were big on player development, but then, you know, they admittedly took a shortcut with their first roster build. Then they sat on their hands entirely too long. For reasons front office executives should probably not admit publicly it was Eversley who said something to the effect of he thought that DeMar and company deserved like another shot, go at this thing last season. Like, you know, like it's an emotional, you're like, you have to take emotions out of it, at least publicly. Don't say that publicly. And then now with them planning to retool the roster with mid-career veterans who will likely make them too good to chase lottery balls, but not good enough to compete for a bona fide playoff spot. Like I'm confused by the direction. I don't know what Arturas or Mark saw in their past that makes them think that this is the right direction to go in, but it's head scratching in my opinion. You know, maybe it'll work, but I just have trouble figuring out how. I can't see it.
Do you still have time? Drew, I want to be respectful of your time because I'm really enjoying this, but I know being on the bus ride for this long, you can get car sick.
I'm all good, man. This is nice and comfy in here.
Oh, this is good to hear. All right, awesome. All right. So I got a bunch of questions. I like that. Let's go to Billy. The second part of that question, Billy Donovan, do you think he's the right coach for the rebuild or retool? Why or why not?
Man, I like Billy. Let me say that. Off the bat, I think the organization is in love with him. I don't know where I settle on that question because in some respects, he turned me on to the fact that he might be the right coach for a rebuild in the way that he brought Modest along. Initially, I was totally against the way that he did it, with him not giving him minutes right off the bat, with him leaning on, you know, long in the tooth veterans like Torrey Craig or journeymen like Talen Horton Tucker and not really using Modest, pulling him out for what seemed to be at the time like the slightest of reasons. Like, I was not for that. But as the season went along and we asked Billy questions as a beat and the answers that he gave in terms of Modest needing to figure out, you know, what it takes to be not only a winning player, but also just a professional, you know, what to eat, how to prepare, like what your schedule should be on back-to-back games, things of that nature that I never like took into consideration. And the fact that Modest was all for Billy and was championing Billy Donovan in the way that he brought him up, like, That really opened my eyes to it. I still don't agree with Billy's reasoning that had he just force-fed Modest minutes and the team went through long periods of losing, that would affect Modest's mentality. Like, I feel like if you're a winning player, if you've got the type of mentality that Modest has where, you know, it's one that's built on fearlessness and a desire to compete at a certain level. Like, I don't feel like Modest is going to lose that just because you give him minutes early on in the season. But I do think that there's something to be said for how Modest received the coaching and, you know, what he did as the season went along, how he progressed, how he did a better job of staying within the game plan and doing the little things, trying to rebound, trying to help his teammates, playing unselfishly. Like, I think that all fuels into me believing that Billy can be the right coach for a rebuild, but there needs to be a certain level of synchronicity between him and the front office. So when I say that, I mean, like, you can't have Billy Donovan, who admittedly said that he wants to play fast, but then you bring in DeMar DeRozan.
Yeah.
You know, there needs to be one shared vision. And I know both Billy and Arturas, they speak ad nauseum about how connected they are, but there's been times where there seems to be some lapses in that connection that they have. And, you know, the acquisition of DeMar DeRozan being one that's at the forefront of my mind right now, but that's my long-winded way of saying it. I think that Billy can be. There has to be a certain alignment with the front office in the direction that they want to go.
I'm a big Billy fan. I do think, like, there's two types of coaches, the coaches who ask their talent to adapt to the system and coaches who adapt their system to the talent. He's proven he's the latter, and I think those are always the best coaches. And, you know, I think his proof in Modest, how he handled him, was how bad Modest played when he was finally given the starting lineup. 10 games, he was terrible. I thought awful. And I didn't even think he was that great to start the year. I thought there were so many horrible mistakes in the defensive end. I just felt I completely sided with Billy on that. But it's hard to argue with the results at the end of the year when he started playing really well. You know, it worked out. You know, it just worked out. So I'm kind of constantly shocked at the amount of anger at Billy with the fan base. Like, I don't think this guy's evolved. Look at this team. Who is a good defender on this team? It's a miracle that we were top 10 after the All-Star break in defensive efficiency. This team stinks defensively. And then, you know, but as in a segue, let's get a little bit into that. Patrick Williams. What's your relationship with Patrick, number one? He seems like a really good kid, so I'm always cheering for him, and I feel bad talking about how horrible he's been. But, man, was this a disastrous year. What do you think the reasons were?
Oh, so my relationship with Patrick, you know, it's a pleasant one. You know, it's not contentious at all. I think it's the same as it would be with any other beat member. I think that, you know, if I was a part of the traveling beat, it would be a little bit different. You know, maybe we could connect on a different level, but I don't really know what to make of Patrick at this point. I don't have any hopes of him becoming a superstar or a star. I'm just more concerned with how he can get his career back on track where he can be a productive role player. I am excited for him going into an offseason where he doesn't have to rehab an injury. Maybe that can help him going into his sixth season. But to, you know, everybody saw it. Like, he struggled mightily again this season. Even without, you know, DeRozan being off the team, you know, for the longest time, it seemed like people were always saying that DeMar was in his way or this person was in his way. They're impeding his improvement. But I don't think they put enough eggs in his basket. Like, he has to be accountable to himself as well and his own improvement. I think it's notable that, you know, whenever we ask Patrick before the season about goals, like, he always talks about, you know, wanting to help the team win, which is great. But I'd like to know what his individual goals are. Like, there has to be some sort of individual metrics or measures that you kind of have in your mind as wanting to hit. But I don't think Patrick ever really answers those questions. He always makes it about the team, which again is great. But I wonder if Patrick sells himself short on his end, just in terms of setting specific goals for himself to try to hit. Like, when you're just kind of going about basketball or life in general, kind of willy-nilly and almost aimlessly, like, I think that affects how you attack things. So I would like to know, you know, that's one thing I would want to ask him going into next season if I get the chance. You know, what are some individual goals you have in mind for the season? You know, it being your sixth season in the league and you coming off an off season where you didn't have to rehab an injury and theoretically had time to spend on basketball and trying to improve different areas of your game, you know? So Patrick's gotta take a hold of his career, man. He's gotta take ownership of it and get it back on track, you know, if it ever was on track, you know?
I think he's been put in kind of a weird situation too, where I don't know if you've been around here for a long time, so you felt this too. There was such a unearned admiration and respect for his game in his rookie year. Kind of like, I think there was this holdover. There was just a large percentage of fans that just were so sick of Gar Pax that they're like, oh, here's the new group and here's their first pick. And oh, it's going to be a homer. Look how great this guy's going to be. You know, to me, I always stated like Gar Pax, they had zero problem with drafting talent, even in their last couple of years, you know, Bobby Portis, Lauri Markkanen, Kobe White, they did a really good job of drafting. The Boylan was a fireable offense, but I don't think these guys have come close, even close to hitting the highs that we had with the previous front office. But there was such a desire to be right. And this, it's a natural human desire. And I'd be watching Patrick Williams' rookie year. I'd call him Standstill P-Will. He was not aggressive. He never did anything. He just would stand and watch and not rebound. You know, that stuff's kind of natural. You have to fight that as a basketball player. And I just didn't think he has that desire to mix it up. Still valuable. He still hit threes at a 40% rate before this year. And he still can guard pretty decently one-on-one. But I think in a way, what's happened is so many people that were so into him and built their reputations on him obviously were embarrassed. And now people hate to be wrong. And it's gone venomous on him. I feel sorry for the kid because what he is a 40% 3-point shooter who he's a role player. That's what he is. He's nothing more than that. He can't rebound but he can be valuable by just hitting open threes and guarding his man. And I just wish people would just say, oh, that's his job. Let him do that. Instead, there's all this other venom around him and it's not good for anybody.
Yeah, Patrick is a good dude, man. I think that he struggles with thinking too much out on the court. That's how I see it. Like, I think he thinks too much, especially on the offensive side of the floor. And I don't know how you turn that off. I don't know if you can turn that off. Kind of similarly to, you know, someone being a dog on the court. I don't know if that's something you can learn. I don't know that he can learn how to shut his mind off on the court, because I feel like he's thinking things through like almost every step of the way. Especially when he has the ball in his hands. And it leads to turnovers. It leads to one hell of a roller coaster ride a lot of times. I thought in his rookie year, he looked like more of a promising player. And again, the landscape of this team changed, on him. So I wonder what type of player he would have been had those changes not occurred, but you know, it still wouldn't have, you know, made him less of a thinker out there on the court. You know what I'm saying? So
yes.
I don't know. I think you're dead on just to say that, you know, our expectations of Patrick should just be for him to get back to being a solid, competent role player. Cause role players are valuable. This is the quote unquote weak link era of the NBA, where in the playoffs, teams are especially hungry for attacking another team's weak link, whether that be on offense or defense. So if he can, you know, get back to form, stop thinking so much out there on the court, be reliable defensively, be a knockdown, standstill shooter, maybe get to the rim every so often, do a better job of finishing once he gets to the rim. You know, I think, you know, our conversations might shift on him just a little bit.
Are you more for, I can't thank you enough for your time, Drew. You're almost at an hour, so just a few more. Are you more for the direction of, which I am now, is like, I just think this team, there's three incredible talents at the top of the 2026 draft. And we just need to embrace the tank and really blow this up. Like, Vooch cannot be on the roster. Vooch had an excellent season shooting the basketball, and that led to several wins. And, you know, like, just for him too. I want him to experience once the second round before his career is over. And, you know, so let's move him off the roster and maybe even think hard about moving Kobe and just go and embracing, you know, a season of losing for development's sake and also get a high pick. I don't think that's what they're going to do, but do you think that would be the right direction? Or in your opinion, what do you think the right direction is?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that that is the right direction. Unfortunately, I think that they would have had to set that up starting, you know, at the beginning of this past season or at worst at the trade deadline. But I feel like the position that they're in now and the position we think they're going to be in going into this next season, they're not going to be in any position to draft one of the top three players coming out next summer, which I feel like is inevitably going to lead them right back to where they finished this past season. I think that they should be trying to chase lottery balls. And that doesn't mean like tanking in the sense of asking players to not perform up to their capabilities. Right. No player is going to do that. Right. That just means setting things up in a way where you prioritize your young guys. You prioritize draft picks, but because of the direction that they're choosing to go in that we spoke of earlier in this conversation, in addition to them or the Bulls not being a team that lands top tier free agents, in addition to them not having the requisite assets to really land, a trade for a superstar player, like the only avenue that they have is to get more bites at the best players each summer, particularly this one coming up and the one in 26. I think as it stands right now, people are not quite as high on this draft coming up as they are on the one in 26. As you mentioned, there'll be three players at the top of that draft and Cameron Boozer, Darren Peterson, and AJ DeBonta. Those guys are leading the way, but it just doesn't seem that Arturas and Mark have any interest in chasing lottery balls. For whatever reason, they have it in their head that they can make a run at being a playoff team with players who are cast offs from other teams. I just really don't understand the direction, that they're choosing to steer this thing in. And again, I don't know. I'd like to know what in their experience and their previous front office experience led them to this style. I'm at a loss for words with it.
Yeah. And I guess the one detour I would consider taking is I am a Zion guy. I do feel like eventually he's going to stay healthy for a year. You got to believe that, or you hope to believe that. And if he does, I mean, that guy's a top 10 player. And so like, if he is available, and the asking price, I laugh when people are like, well, can you get him without Bozelis? No, you can't. I'm sorry. you can't, but I was a little shocked that when I bring this up, to me, it's Bozelis and draft picks and maybe even Kobe, or, you know, another good player. Would you do that for Zion?
Oh man. If it was me, I wouldn't, just cause I would probably run this whole thing differently than Arturas and Mark. But I can see them putting in a bid for Zion and seeing what they can get out of him. At this point, Fred, I'm just kind of like, I'm waiting for them to be let go. I don't know when that is going to come. And I'm not calling for firings, but my belief is that they are not ever going to put this team in a position to win a championship. So we're all just kind of waiting for the for ownership to make that decision themselves and not continue to spin their wheels. And I guess it all just kind of, it leads to me wanting whoever takes over to not be put in such a bad spot, you know, to be out of draft picks, to not have any assets at the ready. That's kind of where I am right now. Like the guys in charge need to change.
Yeah. Yeah. Good luck with that. I know what you mean. It is kind of frustrating because I have zero faith in them at all. I mean, even even Io, which was an excellent pick. I mean, I was sitting on my couch screaming to draft him. You know, like it's not, I'm not going to give you that much credit for getting Io when I literally was, myself who did zero scouting. Anybody who watched Illinois was, you know, adamant about that's a great pick. And I think there's a little bit of overrating Buzelis. I hate to say it, but be quiet. Like I think he's going to be, there's a lot of good signs. He wasn't great last year. There wasn't enough that I would say, oh, he's for sure going to be a superstar and all-star. There's a lot of very good signs, but I'm not sold that he's going to, you know, save these guys their job. And I think that's exactly what he's done. Like his progress is the reason they're here this year is because he turned out to be good.
Yeah.
No doubt.
That's another reason why this front office could benefit from having the best odds at landing the best players in the draft, because I think they need like the no-brainer pick. The less like room for error they have, the better. Like they need that 1, 2, 3 draft selection.
Yeah.
You know, fortunate for them, Buzelis fell to them. You know, at one point I think he was mocked to go in the top 5, maybe even the first overall pick at some point. But to your point about Io, like sometimes players fall into guys' lap, and I think that is kind of what happened with Modest and Io.
Good call. Yeah, I agree. I agree too. We'll see, man. We'll see. Let's do a couple rapid fire quick takes to wrap this up and bring the bus in. Your most underrated Bull of the past 10 years.
Oh man, I had to think about this one. I would maybe say Pau Gasol. He doesn't get brought up a ton. I know he was a little bit past his prime, but he was still a 2-time All-Star, 1-time All-NBA selection.
Exactly.
He was a part of the last Bulls team to advance past the first round. So I'll probably say Gasol.
That's a great answer. I think he made my top 7 all article for NBC Sports Chicago about most underrated Bulls. I can't say it enough. That injury, he was injured in the second round. Cleveland had no answer stopping that pick and roll with Rose and Gasol. And then he got hurt and we didn't really have a chance after that. Most disappointing free agent signing in the Acme era.
And so we're looking at like the buyouts of, Tristan Thompson and, and Pat Beverly, or the signings of Goran Dragic or Andre Drummond, but I landed Javon Carter.
And Javon Carter. I was going to say the second contract for Vooch, but at least last year he salvaged that. I mean, there's so many choices.
It's got to be Javon though. Like they wasted little time signing him 2 summers ago. And he's never been a significant part of the rotation. Like he averaged 23 minutes a game his last season in Milwaukee. And has only seen 14 minutes and 8 minutes respectively the last 2 seasons with the Bulls. Like it's just, you sign this guy and then Billy tells you right away, I can't play him.
You got that special player option for this year, so he'll be back. You know, the other one people forget, he signed Denzel Valentine as a free agent. I love Denzel.
That's your guy.
Yeah. So, I mean, I would never say that was a disappointment, but people love to jump on him. Well, he signed him. You know, he signed him. What's your favorite Bulls moment since the Derrick Rose era?
Oh, man. Would it make me a hypocrite if I say the 35-game stretch we saw with the Bulls in 21-22 and a healthy Lonzo Ball?
Nah. That was a good time. It was a very good time. Yeah. I believe then, you know, you thought things were turning around. It's hard not to, but I do feel, do you agree with me? Like even if Alonzo didn't get hurt, I do feel like if you look at the league, especially Eastern Conference, then it was the Celtics weren't anywhere near where they are today. Cleveland wasn't, you know, the Knicks, you know, the league, the Eastern Conference got a lot better. The league in general did. I don't think they would have won anything of value.
No, I agree with that. I think, you know, I think they would have been a second round team. I don't know if they would have ever been a conference finalist though.
Yeah. And then the last question as we bring the bus in, Drew, your favorite player, and this is not, I didn't give you this prep, but outside of Pippen and Michael and Scottie, who is your favorite Chicago Bull? And Derek. You can't say Derek either.
I can't say Derek. That's where I was going to go. Oh my God. Fred, please don't hold this against me. Please invite me back after I give you this answer.
Oh, don't even say Kirk Ivey. Don't even say it. Oh no. The Is that what you're going to say?
I'm sorry, man. It's Jimmy Butler.
Oh, Jimmy Butler. All right. No, actually, I was going to say the three alphas. I mean, that was one of my favorite teams. I felt like I loved Jimmy at that period. But, mm-hmm. yeah, Jimmy was great. But, I mean, you got to admit, where do you side on, I mean, towards Chicago, towards Minnesota, to, you know, 76ers less so, and then leaving Miami. I mean, the guy's just every stop he's gone to. There's got to be an issue, you know, in the long run with him.
Yeah, he difficult, but more often than not, worth the headache. I think. Can I say that he's kind of in that Draymond Green territory? Almost, because Draymond, you got four championships out of him, and Jimmy obviously still has yet to win one, but he took Miami to two. So I would say he's a headache, but a worthwhile one.
No doubt. And he's done some incredible things, and he's in his proper role now as Robin to Batman, Steph's Batman. So, but I think they're out in the next round, and I can't wait. I got a lot of good tweets for Akali saved up for that. Drew, it was awesome having you on. We got to definitely have you on again when the Podfather's on board the bus too. I can't thank you enough for your time. And just keep doing the great work that you're doing. Where can people find you? Tell us everywhere.
Man, you guys can follow me on Twitter at Drew_H_Stevens. I'm on Blue Sky as well. Same tagline. You can follow The Bigs. We're at It's The Bigs on both Twitter, YouTube, and Blue Sky. We not only cover the Bulls, we are the only independent outlet that is credentialed to cover the Bears, Cubs, and Sox also. With the Bears season coming around, with baseball season in full effect, please check out our YouTube content, check out our website. You can follow us there. Appreciate it.
Drew, thank you so much for coming on the Big Red Bus. I'm a huge fan. I can't wait to see where your career goes as you continue to ask the right questions and just always bring that positivity, though. I love it. I love it. Every time I say that, peace be with you, I smile.
Man, that means a lot to me, man. That really means a lot to me. I appreciate you having me on. It's been a long time coming. I can't believe I can finally say I've been on your show. Again, I wish I'd have been able to talk to the Podfather as well, but looking forward to the next time you guys have me on. I appreciate all your compliments. I'm just trying to add what I can to the beat, man. It's a hell of a beat. A lot of great reporters and writers on it, and I'm just trying to get in where I can fit in.
Thank you so much. Hey, last question before we go. What do you think of our new theme song? Because it's been kind of controversial. Doug's not as big of a fan as it seems like the audience is.
It's growing on me.
Oh, no. No, you're not a fan. Oh, my God. Oh, I would have. The video is coming out of the whole song. I've been writing some ones, too. So you're going to love this summer, Drew. I guarantee it with some of the songs I have. I have one about Kobe White. I have one called Heinrich, which you're going to enjoy, I'm sure. You're going to love my songwriting skills are really blossoming for this summer. All right.
Man. I can't wait.
All right, Drew. Always good to talk to you. Thanks again, bud. Awesome talking to you. And we got to have you on again.